All right, good morning, everybody. It is, Wednesday, almost the end of May, and we are rearing to go early in the morning. I have a fantastic guest this morning, someone I've been waiting to sit and talk to for a very long time, and there are not a lot of those in South Africa because, either they've been here before or I don't want to talk to them. So I'm delighted to have someone who's very, very busy. He's got a lot going on, and he made some time for us this morning, which I'm delighted about, and his name is Mo Flavor. Yes, Mo Flavor. How the hell are you, my friend?
I am very upset that you woke me up at this time of the morning. Again, I did 8 years of this rubbish in my radio career.
You know what?
I'm like, done.
Yeah, I know.
And then there
it is. It's a punishment, right? I mean, why do we... Like, I know because the audience are obviously doing it to themselves, too. They're the kind of people who want to get up and get going early in the morning.
Sure.
And obviously, I think if you start your day fresh and you start with all the information and you're ahead of everybody else, like, you can have a really good lead on everybody. And that makes sense to me. But I think we punish ourselves.
I think from a radio broadcaster point of view, when we know that we've got the option of doing maybe other day parts, I think it is torture. Look, it's a great honor.
Well, no, let's be fair, though. I mean, if you're not doing morning or afternoon, you're just not in the high-stakes game.
Are you talking about me now?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know this because you've done all of it. You've done all radio. I mean, I've done midnight to 4 a.m. I've done 4 in the morning to 6 a.m. So you're not married to a slot, but you know that's where most of the attention goes.
Oh, absolutely,
right?
Because that's where there's the most activity in terms of audiences. And that's where you can really sort of shift things. But
drive time, because when people, I mean, it made sense once because people would be driving in their cars. And I think for live radio, it still does.
Sure.
And I always felt like part of why I had to do this was so that it would be one less obstacle in the way for people who were coming to podcasts, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I've already put all these obstacles in your way.
Yeah.
Now it's a totally different game, but I'll tell you what, I'll just keep it at the same time. I made a rod for my own back, man.
Listen, I commend you for your tenacity and
your will. Stupidity? What are you talking about?
That's actually the word. No, because seriously, I mean, like I'm saying, I mean, I did morning radio for 8 years between YFM and Metro. In fact, at Metro, it is even worse. We started at 5. 5. I mean, the argument was, well, you know, audiences do wake up earlier in urban areas, which... You know, they've given evidence, etc. People getting up really early to hit the 7 a.m. mark at work, etc. But my God.
No, that's disgusting.
It's really brutal.
Because as it is for this one, and I wonder if yours was similar. For this, I'm up at like 4:30. I know a lot of people who are. So it's not just me. You know, there's some gogo somewhere who has to support like 17 of her family, and she's up at like 4 a.m.
Maybe
even earlier.
I mean, on my way here.
And she's catching four taxis before she can even get to work. And then someone says, oh my God, you're late.
You know? It's like, do you know what I've been through? Yeah.
So I get it, but I don't know. I don't know why we, you know, this rat race thing. I saw such a great video the other day. I think it was an ad that they played somewhere in the 90s or 2000s. Of these people in the rat race. And it's literally rats in this video. I'm gonna see if I can find it and we can play it later, because it's so depressing. They all are trying to do things to improve their lives, and then the one rat's in the car, the sports car, but there's traffic, so he's stuck with all the other people in the traffic.
Exactly.
Then he like gets to be really important and influential in his community. But eventually they all walk straight into the trap, and the trap snaps over their neck, and you're like, God, this is so sad. But it does feel like that sometimes with all of us, right?
Yeah. I think it's got to do with, I mean, in my case, morning radio is something I've always respected and I've always admired.
Sure.
I've never actually asked to be on any radio show or any slot. Every show I've ever done, you know, was a manager saying, I think there's something there. So now that I've done it and this thing that I had a great admiration for, you know, I kind of scratched that itch. I'm like, well, that's it. I'm satisfied with having done morning radio. It was good for what it was and when it was. But right now, and you know, even my radio managers have asked me before, which show? I'm like, definitely not breakfast.
No, but I'm sure that they've also tried to upsell you on like other shows when you've been not in prime time on mornings or afternoons, because they know that you can handle those. But I think it's great. I mean, listen, I said that about radio. I was like, well, I've done this now. It's time for new things. And you You felt like that after morning radio. So we've learned the opposite lesson. If I can learn your lesson and you learn mine, maybe we'll both go places. You know? Who knows? But here we are. Listen, it's just amazing to me. I mean, you started off when I first heard of you, you were on YFM, mm. making a big noise there and really like breaking a lot of boundaries, doing a lot of really interesting, cool stuff. And it's hard to do that in radio now.
Why?
Well, I don't know because I don't listen to a lot of it, but that's what people who are in radio tell me. And by the way, while we're talking about radio, I do think it's valuable to, and certainly something I want to do, to just say that I'm very sad to hear the news about Darren Scott yesterday. You know, I can honestly say we were never like the closest of friends, but he was always very kind to me. We always had great conversations. I got on with him very, very well when we were in the same room together. And he was a pioneer in so many ways, and I'm very, very sad. I know he was very ill at the end. He had lots of health challenges, and you know there was cancer, and we tried to do a fundraiser for him. A whole lot of really close friends of his got together, and they were looking after him right to the end. And I suppose when it all adds up, he touched a lot of lives, made a lot of people feel better in the traffic, which is kind of all we want, right, as radio people.
Yeah, the impact that we always talk about.
Yeah, you know? And I know that there were probably, like with all of us, things about Darren that people would say kind of as a joke or as an insult or because they didn't like him. But, you know, in the end, none of that stuff matters because he lived a full and exciting life. And man, he could party. That guy was so much fun to hang around with. I remember I just started at 5. And he said to me, I had the show after his at that stage. And he was like, well, when you finish with your show, come and join me. I'm doing this gig somewhere. I was like, okay, well, it's on my way home. I might as well. I popped in there and I had no idea. Like the number of, he used to make us drink things called suitcases.
Right.
You remember that? There was like passion fruit in one thing and then Jack Daniels in the other.
I mean, who still drinks that?
Nobody. Nobody drinks it anymore, but that was his thing.
Yeah.
And he was just always really kind. And you know, in radio, there can be a lot of sniping and shittiness. It's like in any business. Mm. You know, I'm sure in lawyers' firms, the one lawyer doesn't like, I mean, they made that Suits show out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So they are in lawyers' firms. Yeah. I don't know about engineers. Maybe them too. Maybe engineers get really bitchy with each other in the kitchen in the morning.
But who can make the biggest bridge?
Yeah, he was never like yeah. that. He was never threatened by me. I was never anything but respectful, I hope, with him. But I thought he was a good guy. And the last interview we had was here, which was probably about 4 or 5 months ago. And I said to him then, you know, Darren, you're like a cockroach. Nothing's going to take you. and obviously we knew he wasn't well. So, I mean, it was only a matter of time. And that's true for all of us. Mo, you ever think about mortality?
I was telling the gentleman who was doing my garden the other day, because the gentleman who used to do it before, Chris, just recently passed away.
I like the way we have to say, because this country is so sensitive about shit, the gentleman who does my
garden. Yeah, because I'm not going to call him a gardener.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, of course
not.
Yeah.
Absolutely
yeah,
not.
Yeah, sure.
And he was a gentleman, you know, the late Chris. And I was saying to, you know, his partner who's now taken over sort of, you know, the whole thing of looking after my lawn, etc. I said, you know, we all, like every day that we live is that one step closer to this destination.
Yeah.
Right? So you've always got to think about like what you're going to do. And sometimes nobody wants to think about that day because we would rather live. So I've just chosen to rather live. I don't always think about like the day that happens, the day my time is up. You know,
how old are you now?
I'm 40.
40, okay.
Yeah. I don't know what my legacy is going to be by then. I don't know what people are going to say about me at my funeral,
etc. Do you care? It's almost like you have no control over those things,
It's all
right?
said and yeah. done. You know,
right.
Those that are left behind are the ones who are left to care, to say, oh, well, you know, how can you say that about my dad? Or, you know, how can you say that about my brother?
But well, here's the proof is that, you know, Nelson Mandela lived this incredible life. And ever since then, there's been a foundation that's meant to look after his legacy. Mm. They I think they do a reasonably good job, but even that's debatable. And then he's got this family of his who just keep embarrassing him at every turn. And you think if Madiba couldn't get it right in his in death and after death, then sure. What chance do Mo Flavor and Gareth Cliff have? You know, we're screwed, so we may as well just enjoy it and not worry too much about that stuff. You think about the even great people are still alive. I'm sure that Joe Biden thought he would have a legacy worth keeping alive.
Well, you mean as president.
Well, I mean, I barely kept him alive as president. And now it turns out he's also been suffering from prostate cancer and probably dementia, although they still won't admit that. Barack Obama, I mean, look how much of his capital he squandered trying to support Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And I mean, there was a time where everyone in the world thought Barack Obama was the coolest man on earth.
I still think that.
I don't know. I mean, I think he really spent a lot of that goodwill and capital trying to get shitheads elected.
And I mean, between the shitheads that you talk of and the shithead now, I would rather take the shitheads that he was backing.
Really? You'd rather take a woman who couldn't string a sentence together and an old man with dementia?
Yeah.
Over Donald Trump.
Absolutely. Who is hell-bent on lying about our country, lying about the state of affairs in South Africa any day.
I saw your news editor on a program the other day, the EWN news editor. I didn't say your news editor, like your show's news editor. But she was on a TV show. I mean, I'm just amazed at how many people have the gall to like take with one hand in this country and then slap the hand with the other. I don't know that everything that Donald Trump said was true. I'm pretty sure he got a couple of facts screwed up and mixed up there. But there's a lot that he's saying that we need to address. And my biggest point about that whole meeting is it's finally got the ANC to be treated like adults on the international political sphere and realm, because they haven't been. They've been treated with kid gloves. The Story 94 lasted for 30 years, and they've been living off of that capital too. You know, you only have so much to spend. And after Thabo Mbeki, I think we were no longer punching above our weight. For a while, we were. And when Thabo was there, we were. We were solving problems in the Congo. We were getting involved in peace processes all over the world, even in Ireland, for heaven's sake. We were considered like a place where people had figured out a better way. And I think that we lost that somehow. And this government has just been sort of patted on the head by Europeans and Americans. They've been sending us money, saying, oh, well, as long as you kind of keep your act together reasonably well, you don't completely trash the place, then, you know, you got our support. And now this government's being asked questions, and they're woefully unprepared to deal with them. I don't like seeing our president humiliated.
Of course.
I was on Piers Morgan's show on Monday. By the way, it'll come out later this week. I'll let you know when it makes it out. But I said, I don't like seeing our president humiliated, but the guy couldn't account for himself and hasn't, even to the people of this country. Forget about Donald Trump. He doesn't owe him an explanation. He owes us an explanation why we have massive unemployment, why there's no economic growth, why people are living in crime-infested shitholes all over this country, why women are particularly under threat. Then we can talk about farmers and all the rest of it, which is also important. But the fact that it took Donald Trump, with his single-mindedness, to get our president to sit there and actually answer a couple of questions is outrageous. Why don't we get that treatment from our president?
Yeah, I think there's no question about the flaws and, you know, even some of the fuck-ups that this government has performed over the years. But, you know, if you're going to talk about what happened in the Oval Office, we also have to look at the facts. And I mean,
even post
the meeting, when you look at some of the images that Donald Trump was just, you know, showing to the rest of the world, which were not accurate, right? The idea that there's a genocide, there is no genocide.
I've never said there was a genocide.
No, but that's what he says.
Yeah, but Donald Trump,
you know,
okay.
And that's the thing. And how do you?
I can't believe we're already on Trump, and we're like 20 minutes into the show.
No, because I can see you riled up.
No, but he sucked. I'm not really, because I don't have a dog in the fight. I genuinely don't. But he sucks all the air out of the room, right? I mean, there are more people talking about him in the world right now than probably any other person. It's just amazing how he does that.
Yeah,
whether you like
him
or
not. Yeah, it's to be expected. But
so, okay,
the biggest
issue I have.
Couple
of things he got wrong. What did you not like?
It's not a small thing. You can't say that there's a genocide, that there's a systematic, you know, process of killing white people in South Africa. That is not factual.
Mm.
You talk about you know, women under threat. Women are not under threat. They've been killed. There's a horrific story which is making the news now about a young woman from Bloemfontein living here in Sandton who was brutally murdered and dumped somewhere in Lombardy. I mean, nobody is making enough noise. Nobody's is running to any Oval Office to say...
We had posters up in our office for that baby, Gwegwe, who also... You know, I mean, what's happened there? It'll take so long for the wheels of justice to turn.
Sure.
And those things... Don't tell me the people of this country aren't upset, because we are. But it seems like our government just have this kind of laissez-faire approach. And yeah. I mean, I don't think so. I think Cyril's more concerned about like pala-pala than he is about gender-based violence or farm attacks or whatever else. It's not acceptable that the ANC has run things into the ground, and they have.
I mean, you look at issues around service delivery in many areas, you know, townships, even suburbs, anywhere you go.
And especially rural areas, where we know there's none.
And there's infrastructure that's falling apart, never to be brought back again. There's just a general, at municipal level, just the general sense of not giving a shit about anything. People don't even know why they sit in those positions. People are deployed. There's a lot of nonsense, and there are a lot of horrible truths that we have to deal with as a country, including a government that is at times inept, including people that actually have no care for the citizens of this country.
Well, that, Mo. So I'm not really interested in how many details Trump or Cyril got right or wrong, or the emotions around it, because I think when world leaders get together, there's a lot of theatrics anyway.
And that was quite a theatre production.
It was. And we'll talk in a moment. Yeah. I don't know if you saw the clip of Emmanuel Macron getting off that plane. We'll talk about that just now. Talk about theatrics. But what I'm hoping comes from this, because, you know, people are, there's the brigade who are going, oh, Cyril was amazing. He was so great. I don't get them. And then there's that brigade who says it was a total disgrace. Mm. Donald Trump was a bully. It was unacceptable. This sort of thing shouldn't happen. Orange man, bad stuff. Both of those groups, I don't really understand. I just hope that what comes out of it, regardless of what the two leaders were trying to achieve, is that now the international community pays a little bit more attention to us. I hope it brings some business here. I hope it forces the government to do the right thing in terms of all the things that they're getting wrong at the moment, which I think we all as citizens largely agree on.
But why should it have to take that, for instance? Why should it have to take
Because this government never does anything unless they're embarrassed. Look at how...
And was it really
look
about...
Look at ETOLs. It took all of us as citizens to go, we're not going to pay these things.
But then that's what we need more of. And sometimes I feel like some people are tired, you know, of complaining and protesting.
I think people are just trying to survive.
And standing up and rather focusing on looking after themselves and building their lives, etc. And trying as much as possible to insulate themselves from...
I think they're just trying to survive.
You know, the economy, whatever you want to call it.
I don't think most people sit down like we do probably at the end of the day and think about the big issues in the world or, you know, Gaza or Ukraine or... I think most people sit there at the end of the day and go, I've just got to get through tomorrow. I've just got to make it through. I got kids here. I've got a bank account that's run out of money. I've got to find fuel. I've got to find transport. I've got to get some food on the table. These are the things most people are thinking about in this country. Yeah. We're not a rich country. There are a couple of rich people, a tiny sprinkling of rich people in this country. Everybody else is... By middle class here in this country, I mean, we say, for example, the average person in South Africa, I think when they did this last Stats South Africa said, the average salary for employed people is only between 5 and 8 grand.
Mm.
I don't know how people can live
on
5 to 8 grand. And I know it sounds like Marie Antoinette, but my God, 5 to 8 grand is not a lot of money. If that's the average, then if you're earning 10, 20, more than
you're above average earnings.
Like, you're rich, but even those people
it's tough.
Are taxed at 45, so that's already gone.
Mm.
Half your money is gone already. Mm. Then you have to try and make the rest work. People are living beyond their means, which is maybe their fault, but it's also
the pressure.
You want to be, but you want to live in an optimistic place where you can achieve great things because there's a prosperous future ahead.
Yeah.
You're going to make it better. We're a very positive country. People want to imagine tomorrow is going to be better than today.
Mm. And there is an idea that South Africa could be so amazing and so fantastic. And in pockets, there is that. But there's just so much calamity in other areas and so much frustration. Everybody's got the frustrations. It's not frustrations that are just, nestled in one corner or one racial group or one ethnic group. Everybody's got something that is a deep, deep frustration. And even within all of that, there's a lot of optimism, but there's also got to be a lot of reality. One thing I did take from that meeting in the Oval Office is that generally we need to start being a government that has our shit in order. Yeah. Because there are certain things that we're experiencing for the first time, like what we saw last week, and there'll be many others. And we need to be able to be organized generally and clear and have a vision on what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go. Otherwise, we're going to keep having situations like that, where you walk into a room full of non-truths and still you've got no
and
way
you still of, get embarrassed.
Of getting out of it. Exactly.
Correct.
And that's got to do with our level of organization.
It makes us look like we're like a bit banana republic, you know, which is not a look we want.
No. And so the question is it on us as citizens to say we will be that, we will get our shit in order as citizens, and not be too reliant on government? The problem with that, though, is that there's so many things that the government needs to get right. If you wake up in the morning and there's an outage in your area, I mean, there's fuck all you can do about it.
Let me tell you, the last week and a half, I haven't had any power at home. I mean, I've put in solar and everything else, but it only lasts so long.
Hmm.
And my geysers are not connected, so I haven't had hot water for like a week and a half.
Well, I mean,
so that's great.
I think you're fine with that.
Dude, no, I hate it, man.
You need something to cool you down.
I mean, I wake up in the morning, the one pleasure you have is like a hot shower. And when you don't have it, you suddenly realize like, shit, my life was good before this.
Yes.
But
yes.
The government are not sabotaging this stuff. They're certainly not maintaining it.
Mm.
But they're not the ones who set the thing on fire or blew up the substation or whatever it was that happened. And we'll find out what that was. But we do have an urgency now. If we don't get this right soon, we are going to find ourselves. And I was looking at the numbers for our national deficit yesterday. I mean, South Africa is climbing that scale of how much we owe.
Mm.
This is money that the government has borrowed to pay for stuff.
Mm.
And we can't afford to keep on borrowing.
Yeah.
That and the people of this country are not rich enough to repay that debt.
Mm.
I mean, it's something like between 100 and 200,000 rand each person in this country. If we had to spread it, that's what we're all. So you're already, you know, take your total value, whatever that might be, assets, liabilities, add it all up, figure out assets, then subtract the liabilities, but then add the massive liability that there's another minus of it. Call it 100. Let's not say 200. That's at this stage that every South African owes. That puts you in a position that you're just not going to be able to climb out of the hole.
Yeah.
And we've got to solve these problems. And one of them is economic growth and unemployment, which you solve by opening up business, allowing people to hire more people, making it easier for them. That kind of thing is so obvious. It's like there are four or five things we could do as a country now to increase the opportunities and prosperity.
And we're still, as South Africa, well placed to do that. And sometimes it just boggles the mind why there, you know, is no will or there is no general move or effort in unison from a government standpoint to do what works. It's almost like doing what works is an exception when it should be the norm.
Well, Marco says, are you guys not going to mention the circus in Parliament yesterday? What an absolute disgrace. The EFF are pathetic, honestly. Okay, so I didn't watch. I actually don't watch the news that much, mostly because it doesn't affect me, and I'm not that interested in exactly stories like this. So I could have predicted without knowing the story that the EFF would just make a big noise because that's all they can do anymore. And I did see a clip of Cyril answering questions in Parliament. I saw Vincent, his spokesperson, Vincent Magwenya, in on X, like trying to defend the president and saying it's unacceptable. Let me tell you this. It is completely unacceptable for people to behave like lunatics in parliament. Mm. It's anywhere in the world. We've joked that in Japan they've thrown chairs at each other.
All over the world.
There's always some group of people in parliament who are going to behave like this. And it's embarrassing because people somewhere voted for those guys. Mm. And instead of representing those people and treating them with seriousness and taking their job seriously, they just cause trouble. So I'm not going to be a part of that by watching it, and I'm not going to endorse it in any way, but I'm also not going to sit here and expect better, because if you are expecting anything better from the EFF, you're going to be disappointed. Then it's on you.
I mean, my feeling is, and you know, I also saw clippings of what happened in Parliament, etc. My feeling is the EFF perhaps at some stage felt that that was the way that they could stand out, and that is somehow what, you know, was a representation of the general frustrations of South Africans, etc. But you've also got to look at progressively what else and what other things they would be able to do in a parliament to make themselves heard, to drive points, to land messages, etc. And I'm sitting here wondering, you know, if anyone within their constituency is sitting there thinking, when you guys go in there, this is what you need to do. And I doubt that. I'm not so sure about that. And so I don't think that that play is necessary.
Well, you say play, and I agree with you. It's more theatrics, right?
Yeah, what does it achieve? What does it achieve? So yes, there are issues.
Now. It's tired.
Is there no other way of demonstrating your disapproval of anything the president does, says, breathes, thinks, without having to do that in a parliament, which, by the way, is supposed to be an environment of robust discussion and debate, but done within, you know, a framework of decorum and respect and that sort of stuff.
I don't know how relevant the EFF are. I know that there's a lot of attention on them at the moment. But, you know, Floyd's left, Buyiseni's left. There are a whole lot of people who've just exited. Dalimpofu. These were like the backbone of Julius's kind of hierarchy in the EFF. And I feel now I hear that Floyd is fighting with MK as well. So who knows whether that'll last. It's great. I wish all of these losers well. In fact, the more they fracture and degrade, probably the better for all of us. I don't really have that much interest in watching Parliament, so I'm terribly sorry to disappoint you, Marco. If you're looking for that, go to one of these rubbish news networks and listen to what their analysts and commentators have to say. All the indicators are going the wrong way. Why don't we just try? If you mess with economics, it'll flounder and crash. Less regulation, not more. Well, what I like about that, thank you, Chris, is that you're giving us an actual solution, not just complaining about stuff. And I'm very nervous to just sit here and pile on every week. You know, it's easy for everyone to go, oh, you know, things are going bad. I bumped into a dude at the gym yesterday, old man. And he's like, so what do you think of? And I'm like, just listen to the show. Why must I tell you?
I've already blabbed on for hours on end.
Just listen to the show. I've thought it through. I've tried to put my point across on the show. Now I'm aware. I'm going to repeat it to you at the gym. Anyway, I said to this guy, listen, there are two kinds of South Africans. They're the ones who just sit and complain and nothing gets done. And they're the ones who are actually just going ahead, making their life better, trying to make their families' lives better, their communities' lives better. I went to an AGM for our like homeowners thing yesterday. You know, no one wants to go to those things. But I looked around the room. I'm like, these are people, and they were all there. They were like, they had to bring chairs in. Normally at those meetings, they can't find enough people to have a quorum to vote some shit in.
I mean, must have been some serious business going on.
No,
there.
But you know, so much of it was like nonsense about whether people are allowed to build this or that, and whether we need bumps this high or that high on the roads, and like stuff I really don't care about.
Yeah.
But I looked around the room and I was like, I'm glad to be in a neighborhood where people give a shit.
Yeah.
And where they give a shit about each other and they give a shit about the community, and like that's good stuff. Those people are actually there. They're doing the heavy lifting by pitching up. Yeah. That's already 50% of the job done. Yeah. And then we had to vote for a board, and there were like 10 people on there instead of the normal 5. And we were like, fuck, put them all on.
Yeah.
Great. Let these 10 people who volunteered. Let them get in there and get going.
Sure.
I think that's great.
Because there's a will.
Yeah, but that's local government.
Sure.
So it starts there. If you don't get it right at that level,
you
got no hope at national level.
Absolutely.
How many times is the thing the president decides actually end up affecting you directly?
Yeah. It's like you hear about billions being available for this and billions available for that, but you don't even get a drop of any of that.
No.
And so it is so critical to get our house in order from a micro point of view within our communities, our neighborhoods, etc. And, you know, we got to find the energy from somewhere. We got to find the energy within all the frustration and all the things that make life very tricky and difficult and unsafe for a lot of people in the country.
Well, what just also makes this government look so stupid is that now that they've had their meeting at the Oval Office, apparently they are going to make an exception for Starlink.
Yeah, I heard about that and submissions being made. And
yeah, I had to read about it because someone asked on Monday on the show and I was like, I don't know. I find out most of my news from the comment section. So I looked it up and it looks like they're making a special carve out. Cyril answered a question yesterday in Parliament about how, no, it's not because we had that meeting in the Oval
Office. I mean, that's the timing.
Like,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it looks like you're making an exception.
Yeah.
So why not just can the stupid stuff? The only people who've ever benefited from BEE are like 10 guys in the ANC. That's it. It's never helped anyone else. I don't know why we're clinging to this. And I see even the dumb media, who are always slowest to catch on in this country because it's mostly really, really shitty, uneducated, like ignorant people who are following some ideological bent. Even they're going, yeah, maybe it's time we ask some questions about this. Who has really benefited? Well, number one, Cyril Ramaphosa has benefited. So that's why he's such a fan, because he would never be rich if it wasn't for BEE. He started off as a politician and a trade unionist, and he set up a company because he knew what was coming. And he got the first wave. And we know who the people are who benefited in the beginning. How many ordinary black South Africans have benefited from it? You could probably count them on one hand. I'm talking about ordinary people, self-starters from nowhere. And it's connected people to the ANC. So it's an elite. It's an oligarchy. And people will say, oh, no, but BEE works. Well, show me where outside of the ANC it's benefited people, because it hasn't.
Yeah, my biggest concern is what the outcomes are and what the purpose was. Because it goes without saying, Gareth, that there has to be change from a socioeconomic point of view.
Sure.
There's got to be a balance. There's got to be some sort of equal playing field created. It happens over time. Black people need to be taking part in owning the means of production. And there's got to be a sense from, you know...
That sounds like socialism, though, when you say owning the means of production.
Well, call it whatever you like, but the reality, Gareth, is...
Well, then you're on a losing track, because I'm afraid we've got countless examples of how that's gone down the toilet.
The reality is that black people don't participate historically for obvious reasons because of apartheid. And how then do we create a situation where we are in that space, creating, you know, owning spaces that will benefit the majority of this country?
So tell me how... First of all, I think it's really patronizing to black people who are already in business to say that these people need some help. I mean, there are spaza shop owners and hairdressers and people who are fixing cars. You see them every day when you drive through this country, who are running businesses. They're never going to benefit from BEE. They're already trying to do whatever they have to do to make it. And we're now saying, oh, they need... like the government to hold their hand. Remember, if the state helps you with something, eventually it'll come and take that away. You were saying earlier, we have so many people dependent on the state. So that I get your idea, but this notion that it is empathetic and compassionate and good to let the government get involved in people's day-to-day business, and that somehow equality needs to be at the top of everyone's agenda. You know, a great economist called Thomas Sowell says that it's amazing to him that intellectuals and politicians focus on poverty as if it's some kind of moral evil. And he says they never focus on what creates wealth. They're always more interested in poverty. And poverty, he said, is the natural condition of man. He said we all, at some point, were poor. And yet we regard that as being a moral evil, and we see prosperous people and we think... nothing of how they made it and purely try to attach to it. And this is intellectuals and politicians mostly. Mm. But it's amazing to me that that comment and that man, Thomas Sowell, probably the smartest guy alive right now. He's in his 90s. But this guy has it right. If we focused more on how to create prosperity for people rather than how to punish those who are trying their best and to forward the cause of those who are actually doing nothing, who are parasites to the system, like the politicians, I think we'd come a long way to making equality something worthy of discussion. But at this point, it's just a phrase that people throw out so they can sound like nice people. Oh, I'm a good person.
What, the word equality?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
It's pen watching. Oh, okay. I thought he was watching. I wish the buses of the South African taxi industry, I wish they could take over the spaza shop industry and run it exactly like the taxi associations. They would be the best way to get the spaza shop industry back in South African hands. Okay, but I think Penwell's also talking about illegal immigrants there, and he's talking about foreigners who own a lot of these places. So he's got his own angle there as well. Sorry, Mo, interrupted you.
Look, the thing is, I'm not saying BEE is, you know, the answer to all problems economically.
It's the answer to none, right? That's what I'm saying.
I'm not even saying here that BEE has worked fantastically well. The question I'm raising is to say, how do we get to a point where there's an element of, you know, correcting.
What's this correcting? Like,
no, so, but Gareth, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, no, we know the history of South Africa.
Explain what you mean.
So the history of South Africa.
I know you can
and
you can
talk about governments enabling. The previous government did enable white people in South Africa to thrive, even economically, even in business. And I'm saying to you that we've got to be, and we can't just, you know, walk past like that it was a nothing fact, because the situation we're in now, from a socioeconomic point of view, is a direct result of that. And then how do we then, you know, fix that? How do we then create an environment where, you know, black businesses that don't even need government's help, for instance, are able to thrive? How do we have black people, you know, playing key roles in key industries in South Africa without, you know, a sense of resistance from, you know, white people who, in most terms, run this economy? It can't just be that, oh, well, like, yeah, it's 30
years.
Don't
you think it's embarrassing that after 30 years and all the laws that this government has tried to enact, that that's still the case? Because I do. I think it's embarrassing for all of us as South Africans that despite all of this, first of all, the laws haven't clearly worked well enough. Second of all, we haven't had any approach to kind of business becoming, and despite all the window dressing that we see going on, and there's a lot of that, right? Which is deeply humiliating for the people in those positions. I always feel like it's embarrassing that they're these wheedling white people who are trying so hard to ingratiate themselves with either the government or with the board of their company or with their friends at a braai, try to sound like I'm a virtuous, good person because, you know, we just appointed this person to be the marketing director. And meanwhile, they've put that person in an unenviable position very often where they've done it just for appearances' sake. They've put a person in there and that person finds themselves just sinking because they're not supported. They're not given any real authority. It's purely like a show. And I think what a cruel thing to do to someone, first of all. Second of all, you get truly talented black people who are put in positions, but sometimes not the best positions that they could do even better. And they are regarded by people outside of the know as, oh, he just got that because he's black. And, you know, then he has to work twice as hard to prove that he actually earned that position. I think it's so unfair to put these stumbling blocks in front of black people, let alone, you know, try and create some equality and trying to get the control of businesses out of the hands of white people or whatever else. We don't do the only equality that matters, Mo, because there's no such thing as economic equality. The only time that has existed is in very rare and sporadic attempts for humanity to truly enforce communism, and it just makes everyone equally poor. But you can't make people equally rich unless you provide an economy where they can all bring their talents to the party. And it felt like we were getting there during the Thabo Mbeki years. There was growth. People had the opportunity to start businesses and to make it. black and white, and we were really moving in the right direction. But equality of law is the only thing that ever matters, because that's where the government gets involved. That's where they can arrest you or fine you or punish you. And the moment they have that capricious ability, and you put that in the hands of bureaucrats and of elected popularity contest winners, everything gets a bit messy. So you can't take my phone and split it into 25 new phones for people who don't have them. You know this. This yeah. doesn't make sense.
The reality of black people in South Africa is quite complex. And, you know, you talk about opportunities and people being put in positions. You have to be in a position because you have the credentials, because you have the qualifications. Sure.
And there are a lot of those black people in this country who are absolutely credentialed,
absolutely.
Trained, sophisticated, skilled, and are making a difference already.
And my feeling is that at times there's a resistance. There's a resistance from, you know...
Where? If you look at ads in the newspaper...
No, but let me...
Whoever still looks at those, they say but basically no whites need apply. So where is this resistance? Companies are
just because that appears in a newspaper, Gareth, it doesn't mean it's a true reflection of the realities that are going on out there. We know about the realities of industries that have been predominantly white dominated that are resisting to transform.
Like
because
what?
They want
Which
to
one?
Keep the order.
Mining?
They want to maintain a certain
but which one?
You know, reality. You know,
which industry?
Multiple industries. Whether you talk about I'll give you a few examples. Advertising industry, agriculture, you know, so many, even in the engineering spaces, you know. And then you have to wonder about the intention here. If it really is about the most qualified person, if it is about, you know, a black person that has the qualifications, the credentials to perform in that role, then why then is there still a barrier?
By the way here, Mapelo says, I prefer guests like Mo Flavor who disagree with Gareth. So do I, by the way. But this comment section loses their minds and they bully guests who disagree with Gareth Grubb people. Well, don't worry. Mo doesn't give a shit. He's used to this. He's used to audiences disagreeing and arguing with him. That's what we do, right?
Yeah. And look, there's no question about this idea of, you know, what equality is. And I think from the BEE perspective that you mentioned, there are a lot of black people that aren't happy with how BEE has played out.
Sure.
There is a perception and there are, you know, there's evidence to prove that it is elitist and it is about people who are connected.
The Social Research Foundation did some inquiries and they probably are the best. They got the election results last year, right? Closer than anyone else. Mm. All the other supposed experts were well off the mark. And the SRF said... They polled people on BEE and they said 70% of black people in this country think it's a waste of time.
I wouldn't be opposed to that.
So then who's keeping it in place? I'll tell you who. The same people who take 40% of your paycheck. That's who. Because they're pocketing that money themselves and giving it to their nephews and their aunts and their friends. And I don't doubt that this is bad for all of us as a country, right? So we must scrap this shit. And if it's Donald Trump, because that's how we got onto this, it's always Donald Trump. I'm always at the center of the story. If he had to get Cyril there in the Oval Office with, you know, all those ministers and golfers and God knows what else, if that comes out of it and they're now sitting going in Parliament and in the media asking questions about BEE, then we're moving in the right direction. Because that hasn't worked, so we've got to find something else.
Yeah, but the end goal has got to be, and I know you've got a different view on equality and you've got a different view on all of that stuff, but that's got to be the objective. Because
equality?
No.
Fairness.
Fairness.
Fairness, sure.
Things need to
fairness,
change
I'm with you. Yeah.
To benefit everybody.
And I think that it's a good thing that we're discussing how we can get more people involved in the economy, starting their own businesses. Mm. And all. We're a country of hustlers, right?
Mm.
But the big problem we have is that somewhere in this equation, 26 to 28 million people are on welfare. And it's a pittance. It's a disgrace what we call welfare
overwhelming.
In this country.
It's overwhelming.
I mean, we're talking about a couple of hundred rand.
Mm.
But those are people who are not even trying to find work now because they've given up. Mm. There's nothing for them in the economy. They either don't have the skills or they're far away from where it needs to be, that they can put their talents to work, or they are looking after a whole lot of kids or whatever the case may be. They're in a rural area where there just aren't opportunities for them. Who knows? It's a big problem. Yeah. To start talking about what's happening at the top end of the market, you know, who's on the board of RMB, when we have 26, at a low estimate, million people on welfare. Mm. That should be a far more important issue to us than who's at the top of companies and who has wine farms.
Because what prospects do you have if you are born in a township, you know, matriculate from a township school, and then hit a ceiling or a wall because there's no money to take you through tertiary. You know, only one person out of eight in your family works and not on a big salary, taking care of everybody. It almost creates this continuous cycle. So those numbers of dependency that you speak of are bound to grow. Nobody wants to see that. I, as a South African, don't want to see a situation where, you know, such a huge number of people are dependent on the state.
None of us.
We've got to get to a point where...
You know who wants to, though? The only group of people who wants that is the government themselves. Because when you're dependent on them, they can tell you what to do.
Yeah, we can't have that. We've got to have a sense where people value education, value what it can do for you, you know, contribute. And by contribute, I don't just mean, you know, starting a business. We can contribute in many different ways. We can clean up our neighborhoods. We can, you know, play a part. So many different things.
Can I tell you how nice it is to have someone in here, first of all, who thinks about these things, and I know you do, who has a point of view, which you can articulate really well, and who's also been in the business, the media business, for so long that you're not immediately cowed by either my arguing with you or by people in the comment sections or the idea that this is going to cause noise for you on social media afterwards. I mean, it's just such a pleasure, dude, to actually sit with you and talk like I talk to friends of mine, because this is what we talk about. And not all of them agree with me either. But, you know, we've almost, as a country, got to a stage now where either you pretend that you agree with someone just so you can get out of a conversation, which is what happens a lot. I do it too.
Yeah, right? Because, like, sometimes I said, things aren't comfortable
at the gym, like, I wants to, he wants to have a long conversation about Cyril and Trump. But they either do that or they think, well, if I'm going to have this fight, then it means that we're enemies. And we need to reestablish the rules of passionate argument and conversation and getting excited about things you really care about, because there's nothing worse than being meh about stuff. And I think probably one of the reasons that you've done such an incredible job in radio and on TV and in South African media more generally is because you can be relied upon to care about stuff. There's so much that you can go, I don't care. That's not really something I'm interested in. But you can be asked something and you will think a bit and you'll go, this is what I think. And we need to be able to do that. More people have to do it. You know, someone said to me the other day too, I'm constantly approached by these people who have things to say to me and ask about me when I've got a show. Come and listen to the show, like the people who are here now. Thank you. This woman said, thank you for saying what you say about this country. I said, what are you talking about? I don't have more power than you just because I'm on my own platform. Everyone has social media now. I mean, you could get into huge trouble there, but you can also have your say. And I want South Africans to stand up and say what they think and do what they say. And I'm just thrilled that that's a possibility now, because it wasn't when we started in radio.
Yeah, and I think that's what you need, because you can't have citizens that simply don't care about the state of affairs, about
apathy. It's the worst.
And even when it comes to, you know, elections, right? And we see the result of that, and we see how interesting things shape up to be. So we have to, because this is the world we live in. If you, as a South African, for instance, were watching what happened in the Oval Office and were unmoved, I would have a problem with that. You've got to feel something, because this is our home, you know? This is our home. So you got to be moved, whether you thought it was a shit show, whether you thought the president and the team did well, or whether you agree that, yes, we do have big problems, and this crime problem, whatever it may be, then I'd rather have that than people who don't care. I'd rather have people reporting traffic lights that don't work every day.
Yeah. Right? We need the Karens.
we need them. We need Karen to really be in there and care about what's going on in our country.
Here's Karabo who says, 100%, thank you, Gareth. Different views are important. For goodness sake, we're human beings bound to have different opinions. Yeah, we got to a stage, though, where, and I think we're still in there in some places. Like, X is just full of really angry people, and there's a lot of just people having a go at each other. Mm. They see each other as enemies.
Yeah.
Right? And we didn't used to be that country.
Absolutely. X was, honestly, when it was Twitter, it really was a great place to be.
But even radio, you know, before that.
Yeah.
I mean, we would essentially be competing for audiences with each other. But there was always this fun collegiality. And it used to be fun to have debates and conversations. I mean, someone was on here the other day and she was saying that, it was Tumi Morake. And she's telling me that Felicia Mabuza-Sattel, who now lives in Atlanta, you remember, she used to have that TV show.
Yeah, right? Used to love that show.
And it was so controversial, the things that she was doing. She had white people and black people, old, young, rich, poor. And she talked about the lot.
Yeah.
And it wasn't adversarial.
Yeah.
It was like, we got to get this country talking. Look at what 702, your sister station, because you're at 947 now, what they did in the beginning. And by the way, it's also worth mentioning Izzy Kirsch, who started 702, who also died the other day, sadly. 702 did a lot to start conversations. You know, they were interviewing top ANC people before 92 even, before they'd been unbanned, 1990. Mm. And they were interviewing these people and just getting people to hear these voices and these opinions is massively important.
You talk about really two good examples with Felicia Mabuza-Sattel, who, you know, I was already born, grew up watching the talk shows and, you know, 702 back then. And the idea was to get different voices, different perspectives across. That's exactly what it was on the Felicia Mabuza-Sattel. It's to say we get together in a room as South Africans and we figure our shit out. But we've got to have solutions that work. And that's what we need. We need to figure things out together. I hate the divisiveness that's going on right now. Maybe X is just, you know, not a true reflection of how everybody feels. And I truly agree, because all you see is racist this, the racial that, racist this, racial that.
Because what happens when people aren't doing well and they're feeling threatened, they revert to a very tribal mentality. That's how people are.
I want to believe in my heart of hearts that most South Africans don't see things that way with all the rubbish we're seeing on X right now, that in a room together we can figure shit out. And I think we need to also, as citizens, realize that how much power we actually have.
We do.
Right?
Lucky Matlapeng says, I only disagree with Mo Flavor on X when it comes to football.
I'm assuming they're not a Kaiser Chiefs fan.
No, probably that's what it is. Gareth, I hope you told Piers about coloured people. We always get left out of the conversation, says Astrophysics. Listen, you'll see the clip later this week. It's very difficult on those shows, as you will know too, Mo, having been on many of them. These panel discussion shows where they've got 40 minutes.
Mm.
Everybody has to have their say. You don't really get to make any extremely important points. You probably get two opportunities to speak during the whole thing. And I was on with three other people. I don't expect fireworks. It's not like that. And you know, these shows are also, they're trying to get sound bites and get people fighting. And I didn't fight with anyone. You'll be disappointed.
You didn't fight with anyone?
Gareth. You'll be disappointed to know.
You like Cyril now. You go in there, hat in hand, on the Piers Morgan show.
I think sometimes it's better to make sense and be the adult in the room than to try and do something for your own reputation. I don't really care if I'm ever on the Piers Morgan show again. And I think what I said was true and was sensible. And if that's not exciting enough, then they don't have to have me back.
I hope you represented South Africa well, Gareth.
I hope I did. Because
we, you know, at some stage,
I think that was my purpose.
We're the corner.
I think that's why I was there. No, but that's the thing. You know, people will try and tout their point of view. Mm. And these days, the entire internet is basically just a reputation-making and destroying machine.
Mm.
I don't think that that's good for any of us in the long run.
Mm. Mm.
If you are chasing clout and you're trying to trend or go viral or any of those things, you're really setting yourself up for a huge amount of hurt down the line.
It's interesting you said,
because you've been in this media business for 25, 30 years. You have to think long term.
You look at, you know, when you talk about reputation, everybody, you know, wants to protect their reputation, and public figures and celebrities more than anybody else. And you look at some of the stuff that happens on social media where their personal businesses blasted all over there purely to get their attention so they can trend, you know, the gimmicks, etc. And this is stuff that we've seen for a long time, even before Instagram was a thing, even before there was TikTok. We saw this sort of thing, and I've always personally had a big issue. That's why I never, you know, put my personal stuff out there that I wouldn't want, you know, people to know about, or that I wouldn't be comfortable to discuss in public.
Yeah, you don't talk about your wife, your kids. You don't talk about your personal life.
And even if I do, it's within context.
Except if it's like something anecdotal, which you might share on your show about how, you know, I was shopping with a wife the other day and this happened. Yeah. But you don't go on there and like talk about your private conversations with her about the kids.
I mean, it's a mess. And you're right. Reputation management is huge.
You're not saying your life's a mess. Just let's be clear, because someone's going to quote you out of context.
No.
He's saying it's a mess when people do that. And I agree with you.
Absolutely. So the space we're in now has created a situation.
I saved you a lot of pain.
Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliantly done. I think a lot of people.
Mo Flavor says his private life is a mess. Can you imagine?
But I mean, it is true about how, you know, we need to be a little bit more cognizant about our reputations. And I think most people are not idiots. I think that people know and understand the value of a good reputation, but they put so much on the line. And this thing of trending and going viral and being on everybody's WhatsApp group. And I don't know what the fascination and the desire is.
Well, really. we can get into that. I mean, we've got to take a break at some point. And we'll come back with Mo Flavor in just a minute. There are a couple of questions here. Piers is just Jerry Springer on the internet. People are showing their true colors on X. When is the show? The clip will go out this week. They didn't give me a date, so either.
And you didn't ask either.
Well, no. The producer said to me, "We'll let you know." So it's either today or tomorrow or Friday. That's all I know.
And I'm really interested in, because here's the thing: every time I see a South African on these international shows, I'm really interested to see what's being said. It doesn't matter the topic, right? So I'm really keen to see what Gareth Cliff was saying to Piers Morgan. Because some people feel you guys are on the same WhatsApp group. You do know
I
that.
I know, and I think people will...
How do you feel about that?
he did say something to me like, "Oh, I see you pulling a lot of faces there, Gareth." You know, like, Piers, that's what you do for a living. But anyway, I'll let you know as soon as it's on. And we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. Mo Flavor's with us this morning. It's Wednesday. Get up, get going, start the day. Let's kick some ass.